You will never see a photo which I take from actually standing up in eyesight. I've never ever taken a photo which is on the same level as my eyes when I'm standing up, because that's how I see life. That's everybody else, how everybody else sees life. But when was the last time you looked at a concert and you just said, okay, I'm gonna lie down on the floor and see how the microphone and the artist looks from down here? Probably never. So for me, it's about finding out, again, hashtag always a student, and I already know what life's looked like. I'm 192 centimeters tall. I know how life looks like from up here, but I don't know what it looks like from this angle or that angle.
Welcome to Perth Reconnect Podcast. We're in the Beyond Rest Chill Out space. I'm your host, Ben Dunnan, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Matt Puccinelli. G'day, g'day.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, it's one of those generic questions.
Yeah, we're not going to pretend like this is like we've just walked in the room with the microphones on.
Good to see you again. Yeah. Didn't know where you came from. With us is our special guest today, which is Steve O'Bonhaga, a professional photographer, former professional breakdancer. He was born in Germany and spent most of his time growing up in Sweden. Now he lives in between Australia and Asia, and he's got so many fascinating stories to talk about in his journey in life. How you doing, my man?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me, and compliment to your memory.
Yeah, that was a good. That was
remembering
good
all these facts.
Yeah,
that's great.
All right, not bad. Yeah, normally I'm not that smooth.
We got
to do a lot of retakes and editing. Yeah, I feel like we've actually done our podcast already and we don't even need to do this. But for the sake of the audience, obviously we've got to record something. Yeah. But you're a fascinating man to talk to. Firstly, how did you're an avid floater. I know we're not supposed to be talking about floating so much in the podcast, but I'm kind of curious, when did you first discover floating?
I first discovered floating a couple of years ago. I can't give you a specific date, but I'm one of those Joe Rogan guys who listen to the podcast, and then he mentioned something about floating and I got curious, read about John C. Lilly, and then a friend of mine has a float center in Bangkok, went floating there regularly, and once I did it, I was just hooked. It helped my back a lot, so that's why I kind of got addicted, and I also use it for my mind, because I'm a workaholic and it helps me to calm down my mind.
And when you say you read about, obviously most of us are, you know, Roganites. We can't, like, I came through Joe Rogan, and a lot of people did. When you say John C. Lilly, did you know much about his history with dolphins?
I had no idea at all. It was a complete new name, a complete new face. And it was something I completely learned about from zero to hero.
And do you know about the history with dolphins now?
Well, I know a little bit, but probably not enough to go into specifics.
Okay.
So I know the rough ideas, where he started, how he started his pots, and his thoughts about dolphins and communication and stuff like that.
Well, he's one of the main reasons why dolphins are now protected species, through his research. And he initially was a bit of a villain with dolphins, because he was sort of, you know, researching on them. And then he realized the error of his ways and it wasn't about him. And then in his final years, he became like a big sort of, what do you call it? Like a
advocate
sort of like someone that promoted, tried to get all these things passed to make them protected species. But there's a very interesting documentary. I mean, you can go through his books, but I think he's written 18 books, but one, there was a YouTube documentary I saw. I think it's The Girl Who Spoke to Dolphins. So it's about one of his interns. And he had a mansion in Malibu that he flooded with water, and he had all his dolphins swimming through there. So dolphins living in a mansion.
This was funded by the US government as
well. That's crazy.
Yeah. And the idea was that they had to teach the dolphins how to speak English through their blowholes. But the thing is, they only had 6 months to do it. And I mean, like, I'm a father of two, and I can tell you, a baby to speak in 6 months, it's just nigh on impossible unless they're a freak of a phenomenon, a prodigy.
I feel like communication in general, not only human beings but also animals, if you look at orcas, killer whales, different dialects, how they communicate with each other, I think that's something that we have still to learn, because people, we talked about using swear words, and I don't want to use a swear word, but alone the word fuck, I can say fuck you or I fucking love you. Same word, but means different things. So we are just touching the edge of how to actually communicate, because communication is not just word, it's tone, it's expression, it's gestures. And I think there's so much left to learn in that regard.
Well, here's a good tip for you. How long have you been in Australia for now?
A total of 7 months, 8 months.
Okay. So here's a good lesson for you. Because Australian, we speak English, but we don't really speak English.
Speak Australian.
Yeah, we speak Australian because I think Arj Barker said that it's the only country in the world where the onus is on the listener, because we can just make up any word and you got to work it out.
So, yeah, you guys shorten a lot of stuff. You don't say afternoon, you say avo and stuff like that.
Yeah, because we like less syllables. Mm-hmm. So that's why being Ben, my name, it's a lot easier for everyone because it's one syllable. And that's why we call each other mate. And here is the key point. Mate can mean a million different things. It's all in the tone. You've got
the most condescending name on the planet, but also the most admirable.
Yeah, it's like, mate. Yeah, there's so many different ways you can use it. So learn the mate. That's the key one for you there.
Okay, mate is on my to-do list.
There you go. That's priority number one. So down to it. This is probably a bit of a rude question, but I'm going to ask anyway. How old are you now?
I'm 33, turning 34.
Turning 34. When did you turn 34?
September 25th.
Okay. Okay, cool.
My social security number is.
I saw all those calculations running through your head, Ben. And then you realize you're like, why am I even calculating this?
Yeah, I was trying to think. I was like, hang on, do I know someone on September 25th? I think one of my best mates is September 25th. That's why I was sort of calculating.
I could be full of shit, but I think it's the same birthday as Will Smith.
That's pretty
not
cool.
Sure. Not sure. Could be full of shit, but I would like to think it's true.
Yeah, he's got a 60-foot mural in Philadelphia of him, so that would be cool.
He's a fascinating character.
He's amazing. Mm. Very motivating. When did you start being a professional breakdancer? When did you get into breakdancing?
Well, I think there's no real date where you become a professional breakdancer, and professional might be the wrong word to use, but I got into breaking when I was 14, 15, and basically through breaking, I started traveling. And then, I dropped out of school when I was 17 and wanted to be a photographer. I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to go out and see the world. Obviously, when you drop out of school and you're 17, you don't really have the money to do so. So yeah, what do? I started to do street shows and made my money with that, entered a few competitions, and did some commercial work on fairs, like motorbike fairs. We had a show, which I will never forget, where we had to represent some biker clothing, and biker clothing also included biker underwear. So we braked in biker underwear, and that was one of the funniest gigs we had that I can remember. Yeah, that was when I was 17, 18, 19.
And what did you visualize in your dream of being a photographer? When I say visualize, what did you actually see? Like, because there would have been, in my opinion, my mindset, I would have seen like a perfect picture or a silhouette or something.
Visualizing, I didn't really visualize. What I knew pretty early was that I don't want to be 60 years old one day and say I should have. And I'm more of a kind of guy, I tried and I failed. That pleases me more than say I should have tried. And I don't know, I just had a fascination with taking photos and how people can make a living out of it. And then it just developed from there. I never had that perfect picture in my mind, but I pretty early knew that I wanted to travel and I wanted to shoot war, because I'm interested in, again, communication, conflicts, all this kind of stuff. Never have been out there to shoot war, but from war you get into reportage journalism, and then I always had a big passion for sports, so sports came along. It was just the goal of I wanted to go out and see the world. Yeah.
What is your choice of sport?
My choice of sport, back in the day, I would have said football, and we're talking European football.
Proper
soccer,
football.
Soccer, as people say.
Being in Perth, you can get away with saying proper football because there's a strong demographic.
Talked about it before, like football can mean different things in different countries. But all kinds of sport. I love Formula One. Then I got into MMA a couple of years ago. That's where I make my main money at the moment. I travel the world for several promotions. Skateboarding, breaking. I can watch curling for 2 hours, man. I just love sports. I love competition. And something that I learned of shooting so many different sports is that everybody chases the same moment. that moment of complete freedom. Like for a BMX guy or a skateboard guy, it might be that half a second where he's in the air and he doesn't feel gravity. While for a football player, it might be that feeling after he scores a goal and the whole stadium cheers just for him.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I love different sports. And it's interesting for me to see how different athletes from different sports try to reach the same moment.
Yeah. But you haven't worked out cricket.
I haven't worked out cricket. I don't know what's the feeling in cricket. I don't get the sport. Yeah. In Europe, it's not really big. I mean, England, I think, is pretty big.
Yeah, England's, yeah. That's where it was spawned.
Yeah. And then you have India and Australia, right?
Yeah. Most countries do play cricket, but obviously in the World Cup, it's down to like probably a select few countries. Like Holland have a half-decent team.
Okay.
Yeah, it pretty much comes down to South Africa, India, Sri Lanka, Australia.
So what's the deal with cricket? Because there seems not to be any point of excitement for me, for the athlete. Like everything is pretty, give me a cup of tea, I'm going to throw the ball. If you're ready, you can hit the ball, or you just wait another 5 minutes. And it takes forever. It takes 3-4 days.
Yeah, sometimes 5 days and it's a draw.
You should watch 2020 cricket, which is 20 overs and on both sides. And
are you into cricket as well? Or?
Not massively. I used to be as a kid, but I do watch 2020, which is now called Big Bash League.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Australian League is.
And it's kind of like it's just cricket condensed down to like 2 hours almost.
Yeah.
Something around about that. So it's a much more engaging way of watching cricket. So I wouldn't watch a test match, but
I'm open to get to know the sport, but a few of my friends have tried and it didn't work so far.
I can understand why it's the toughest one to get.
I come from the action sport scene, you know. For me, I need some action in there.
Whenever people give me, because I grew up with cricket, so for me it's very easy. But that's the thing. Whenever people give me crap about it, that's the most boring sport ever. And I respect their opinion. I even understand and empathize with them. I'm like, look, I was raised with this, so that's what I understand.
There is a rule of thumb. Sorry to interrupt you, but there is a rule of thumb. Every sport where you can wear shades and a hat while you're playing it is not a sport. Golf, baseball, and cricket. And I'm sure there's a few others too. Curling.
You know, chess is classified as a sport.
Oh, boom. You're talking to the right person. I'm a chess freak, my friend.
You can wear a hat and sunnies in that, man.
But it's a different kind of sport. It's a mental exercise.
Yeah, okay.
I love chess, man. I love the history about chess, the politics with Bobby Fischer back in the day. I love it. I play so many games a day. I'm into speed chess. And it's a huge part of my life. Chess for sure.
Well, learn something new. You're currently sort of fascinated, or you're what you would call an MMA enthusiast?
Well, because I work with it, MMA is a huge part of my life, and I used to live in Bali with the guys from Bali MMA. So it's not only shooting the sport, I also had the pleasure to get an inside view of what life is for a fighter, how much effort he puts in there. And I think that puts a different perspective, because a lot of people, they just see the violence in the cage. And as Rogan says, it is problem solving with physical consequences on a high level. And I think if you spend time with it, and if you can appreciate the difference between stand up and ground game and wrestling, and see what it takes for me to land a punch in your face, it's certainly way more interesting when if you just watch it. It's the same with cricket. If you know everything about cricket, it's a super interesting game, I'm sure. But for me, who doesn't know anything, I barely know the rules, then obviously my interest is not as big as it is for somebody who loves it.
Well, you just actually gave me an interesting thought on that, because that is like irony at its best, because with cricket, it's called the gentleman's game, yet there is so much there's so much sledging, and the stuff that you don't hear on camera is absolutely appalling. I hate the trash talk that goes on in cricket, but that's just the nature of the game.
But whereas, I don't need it. It's fun.
Stand around doing nothing.
Well, for me, it just doesn't fly for me, because I am also an MMA enthusiast. So in my opinion, if you're going to trash talk, you got to back that up with your fists.
That's true.
And with MMA, my experience just being in the gyms and training and working with the other fighters is, even though I'm a trash talker naturally, I can't help myself. I'll accept the beating and then move on. But there's a lot more respect, and like the nicest guys in the gym. Like there's this stigma. Like the cage got banned in Perth. You probably didn't know that. it was banned for many years by a politician called Colin Barnett. And his reasoning was that it was a gladiatorial theme and he didn't want to encourage that stigma.
It kind of is, though.
It is. It is. And he didn't want to encourage that in this part of the world. And I could see his point of view, but that wasn't his choice to make on behalf of everybody else. And so a lot of people were disgusted. But the fans aside, when I go to local fights, it's really amusing to me because every time I've gone to a local fight, I feel sorry for the security because they're probably the weakest guys in the room.
That's like, true. That's
like
true.
I didn't see any yokels that are just drinking beer with big guts and just watch too much UFC. Yeah. I saw all guys from different gyms. Big, muscly guys, but full of respect.
Mm.
And there was no trouble. And everyone's just sitting there drinking waters, just enjoying the event.
Very true. I've been shooting all kinds of sport, from Formula One to football to motocross to golf to whatever you basically can imagine. And I've never seen any bigger sportsmanship than in MMA because I think that all the athletes are very aware of what a fighter has to go through. It's not just you show up in a cage and you fight. You have a 6-week training camp and it's not just training in the gym. It's sacrifice. You go down in weight because you have to do weight cuts. You have to show up every day, even if you don't feel for it. You're sore in your muscles. And then you have to go back to training again. And when, if you have a proper training camp, you might have to leave your family because your family keeps distracting you from actually focusing on the fight. So a sportsmanship, I've never seen anything like it as an MMA.
It's yeah.
Amazing.
Mm. Yeah. Which gyms do you currently work with?
I don't work with gyms specifically. I have to go to the gyms quite regularly because a lot of pro fighters train at the gyms and then I go out, shoot editorial content. You have obviously in Asia, one of the biggest places to go for fighters is, I forget the name of the road, but there is in Phuket, Thailand. You have one road where you have like 50, 60 gyms. There's one float center too. You have Phuket Top Team. You have Tiger Muay Thai. You have AKA Thailand. You have Bali MMA. You have Saigon Sports Club. You have Evolve MMA in Singapore, Vietnam. You have a UFC gym here in Perth. And I don't work so much with the gyms. I work more with the promotion. One Championship, Fool Metal Dojo, Brave MMA, where I just came back from Jordan. And many others.
You're in Jordan?
Jordan, yeah. I love that place. Amman, Middle East, the first time for me. Let me adjust the mic.
Go for it.
That was quite funny. If I tell you a little story real quick here, because normally when you have fighters, they bring friends and family and the gym is there to back them up. But that works a little bit different in the Middle East because in the Middle East, they come with their whole tribe. So out of the sudden, you don't only have families and friends sharing with you. You have 100 people from tribe A and 100 people from tribe B. And the Middle Eastern people are very emotional. And sometimes you get a chair or two flying through the cage.
Wow.
It was super cool. I love the Middle East because I'm also a big fan of the Middle Eastern food.
Oh, thank you. Mm. I was about you just took the words out of my mouth. Like when I think Middle East, I'd love to go to the Middle East for the culture of the food. Whenever I want to travel, I want to travel for the food and that's it.
Mm-hmm. And kebab is a huge thing from Berlin, got invented in Berlin, Turkish food. And little people know that's actually invented in Berlin.
Mm. Mm. When my brother came over to my place last night, I had the TV on while I was just working on the computer in my room. So I wasn't even in the same room. And he's like, why do you have the TV blasting? I said, no, it's okay. It's channel 33. That is a food channel. That is educational and informative.
But let me ask you a question. Do you take food pictures?
No.
Okay, I like
no,
you.
No, I don't. I don't get that.
Me
like,
neither.
I saw that on like Facebook for a while. Like they would take photos of what they're eating and something, and I was just like, just be. That's a good example of being present. Just enjoy the meal.
That's very
converse,
true.
Converse, socialize, but breaking bread is a celebration.
Mm.
You shouldn't be there with your phone. I like. There's someone had this rule. I don't know where I saw it. They stack all their phones up on the table. And the first person
that's
to pick
an old
up,
one, yeah, yeah.
It's an old one,
yeah,
okay.
It's been around. Well, it's, you I know, would, I don't think one person started. It was kind of like this.
But let me ask you this, because you said you like food. Have you always appreciated food? Because I had the conversation with a friend of mine. My dad is a chef, so I've always been spoiled with food, and it took me a long time to realize, hey, I should appreciate food a little bit more. So I recently just became a foodie. I think that's what the kids call it nowadays. But I normally I'm a person that's food on the plate. I eat it quick and then I go back to work. But now I try to settle down a little bit more and actually try to taste the food and not just swallow it.
No, I'm lucky, recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Takes a little bit. Some people like me, when I work, I often forget to eat. And then I just want to get it done quickly because it's something I have to do every day. And I don't want to spend time thinking about my food every day, you know? So appreciating food is something that I just recently learned and I enjoy it.
Mm. So I've got to ask, we were talking before about, because we're both photographers, you showed me your tattoo on your wrist, right?
Yeah.
Where the watch usually is, and it cracked me up laughing. And you said, by the way, what time is it?
Yeah.
And you showed me and it's the shutter.
Yeah.
And you said it's always time to shoot, I think is what you said.
Yeah.
So obviously you live life by the lens. And
I do live life by the lens.
Yeah. Mm. So I want to kind of ask, you know, what was your process in terms of getting into photography specifically, and what was guiding your passions at the time? The reason why I ask this is I've noticed I'm having a lot of conversations, especially here with a lot of people who are really in that process of discovering their passion and what they're passionate about. And you have obviously done that and taken it to the nth degree. Like you're traveling around the world and, you know, you are living the dream of, you know, what a photographer could ask for. Mm. When did you first identify that this was something that you wanted to do and you decided, yep, I'm actually going to pursue this? Like you did say you were traveling already, but you know, what guided that process?
Well, first of all, I think this is the moment where you guys can lean back and just enjoy a tea because it's a long story. I don't know how much time we have.
Please
but,
go ahead.
I think it started with my grandma and my mom, because when we were traveling, you can't really call it traveling. It was more like caravan traveling, camping, stuff like that. In Scandinavia, that's why we later on moved to Scandinavia. But my grandma and my mom, they always took pictures, and they always took 100 pictures of the same waterfall, which is not very interesting. So at some point, my dad was just like, here, Steve-O, you take the pictures. And then I didn't really think of it. And when I moved to Sweden, to a new country, I got I had to do the 9th grade or 8th grade. I don't remember exactly which grade it was. Again, because I had to learn the language. And then in Sweden, the school system works in a different way where you have to go to school until 9th grade and then you get into gymnasium. So if I want to become a carpenter, I go to carpenter gymnasium where I have 1 week of regular classes, English, math and Swedish. And then I'm 1 week out and actually work on the field and make some money. When you have to do these choices, I realized that my first choice wasn't really what I wanted to do. And then I changed again and then I changed again. And every time I changed, I had to do the grade again because you have to start from the basics until I said, you know what? I don't care. I just jump out and I feel like life is going to show me what's going to happen. So dropping out of school, the Swedish government had a project going on where they basically paid their fee and you could intern at a company. So the company got an employee for free and the government was paying for it. And we could basically choose. And I didn't think much. It was more by accident. And I got lucky to find a couple that just moved from Gothenburg back to the small town where I grew up. And they did photography. And I thought, I don't want to carry too much weight building and construction. I'm kind of a more, you know, the way of least resistance. Let's take photos. And the first day I stepped in there, I want to have what they have. And that's basically how it started. And then I started taking pictures. And like every artist who is on their path or who has made it has probably experienced this, that when you start, you think you know it all. And then you kind of want to work for big clients as quick as possible. And in order to get to those big clients as quick as possible, they ask you for one thing, and that's experience, which you obviously can't have. So I always said, I work for this in this company. I work for this in this company, which never happened. And one of those companies was Red Bull. But I'm also an honest person. So after a while, I said, I've been saying this for a while just to get jobs that I work for Red Bull. I should probably try to make it happen to work for Red Bull. So went for that, didn't make it the first time, asked them what can I improve to actually make it. And then, yeah, tried it again, that got this line, and then tried it again, and I made it. And then, yeah, it took its way from there. And then I mostly looked for stuff that I wanted to shoot, and I reached out to the companies because I feel like nobody is waiting for you out there. It doesn't matter what you do, if it's live, if it's clients, you have to make your own path. You have to be disciplined in a certain way to realize that. I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah, I looked up places and companies I wanted to go to or work for, and then I always found a way to make it happen. Like I pay my own flights, I pay my own hotel, you just give me a pass, I take some photos, you can use them. If you like them, you're happy to use the photos, and then you can hire me the next time and pay me for that. And yeah, then I realized that traveling is a big part of what I wanted to do. And it's just so much that goes into that. For me, photography, as you said, I have my whole left arm is black and there's a little shutter tattooed. And I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan. And Keith Richards once said, life is like a canvas. You can paint it how you want to. And a canvas is normally white. So I just decided to make it black. And I like to use my tattoos as reminders. It's hard to put all this in one sentence or in one short description. I'm sure we get more into details if we keep talking. But yeah, photography for me is not just a passion. And if you have something in your life that you really care about and that brings you a lot, for me, there's two things in life that taught me a lot. And I know it might sound stupid, but it is traveling and cannabis are two things that teach me a lot. Open-mindedness and different cultures. The world is bigger than what you see on TV. And yeah, I always get a little bit emotional because I've been doing this for 17 years and I did a lot of shit, but experienced a lot of shit. I've been in jail in 5 different countries because of photography.
Nice.
But yeah, it's follow your passion. And the only rule that you need to success is whenever you do it 100%.
Yeah.
And then repeat every day and success will come at some point. It's up to you what you consider success.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say that's kind of, you know, Henry Rollins.
Yeah.
He says, you know, success, his take on it is success is equal parts opportunity and saying yes.
Mm. So that's what
persisting.
I mean.
We
have to define what you mean by success, because for some people it is to have $1 million on your bank account.
Exactly.
For me, it is to see the world. And I like the approach of, I don't need to own a yacht, but I would like to be on a yacht. So I figure out a way how I can get there with my photography. So I look up a yacht company, or maybe I set up a shoot on a yacht. There's different ways to get there. And working for different promotions now at the moment, I don't need to pay my flight tickets. They fly me everywhere. If you would know my schedule for the upcoming few months, I have London, Amsterdam, Oslo, Bahrain, Colombia, Myanmar coming up, and that's all in 1.5 months. And how much do I pay? Zero.
Nice.
I get paid for it. You have to find your way. That's why I love chess. And I think chess should be something that is be taught in school, because every action has a reaction. Every move has consequences. And if you're aware of that, you know what moves to make and you know how to take your next move. You know, okay, if it doesn't work, this is going to happen. Then I can do that. Okay, if it does work, then I can make this in order to improve it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I love chess, to come back to chess.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a podcast as well. I don't want to plug it.
Absolutely.
It's called Surrounded by Details. And I just love that the world is full of details. Coming back to communication, I recently went to, I think it's called a baby shower or something similar. And there was a conversation going on. And when I talk to you, I look you in the face and I see how you react. But I also see that you peel off the beer label on your beer bottle, which tells me that you're probably nervous and don't want to be in the situation that you are in. So yeah, life is full of details and you have to pay attention to those. You cannot just waste your time. And you only live once. Yeah. Summary. You only live once. Don't mess it up.
YOLO.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we were sort of originally starting the podcast off was based off the whole regret of the dying. And we were trying to get inspirational people on the podcast to inspire other people locally to show that you're not alone. Like, anybody can achieve their dreams and their goals.
Literally anybody. People tell you that.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but people tell you that all the time. And you know, when you're a kid and your parents tell you something and you think, yeah, I know. Are you born with 30? They're not. They know exactly. They had to go through the same thing. And I feel like a lot of people out there, including myself, hashtag always a student. You always learn. And for me, of getting older, I can't wait until I'm 50, 40, 60, because I feel like I get smarter every day and I learn new stuff every day. And when people tell you can accomplish everything you want, and it sounds so cliche, but it is really true. But it takes a while to realize that, because I'm recently really got, I always had a passion for magic. So I decided I don't want to sit there with 60 and say I should have tried to learn some magic. So I got into actually learning some magic in cardistry. And I don't know if you're aware with cardistry, but it's the craziest stuff you can do with cards, and it's physics and illusions, and it's super interesting. Just keep trying, just keep learning. If you repeat, you will succeed. It's as simple as that. But a lot of people take the way of least resistance, and nothing is for free in life. You have to work for it and you have to spend time for it. And yes, you can go out with your friends, have a beer every Friday and Saturday after work because you work all week, or you can work after work on your dreams. And it's up to you to make that decision if you want to sacrifice that or not.
Yeah,
I think that's a really good message for people to hear, because especially I'm 25, and so I've got a lot of friends who've done art degrees and everything, and they're graduating, and you would hear it just as well. Like, you know, there's that rhetoric of art school is bullshit because, you know, no one hires you, there's no
it
job
is.
Kind of
Let's
thing.
Be honest, here it is.
It kind of is, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the academic, like learning arts in an academic environment is quite handy. And it, like, taking the course itself, you know, it can be quality, and you can't expect a job to come out from it. But what you're talking about, and the kind of, perspective I have on it too, is that, you know, you've got to create those opportunities for yourself. And what you said before of, you know, just asking really resonated. You're the second photographer to say, you know, that had that fake it till you make it mantra. Mm. Another photographer.
No, it's not fake it till you make it. There's a huge difference. Yeah. There's a speech by, I always forget his name. Maybe I will remember, Neil Gaiman. It's a commencement speech, and it's 19 minutes long. And for everybody who's listening, and for you, who is an artist as well, listen to that speech.
Yeah.
I listen to it once a week, and I've been doing it for 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
I could try to replicate what he says, but I would probably trash it. So yeah. Neil Gaiman, commencement speech. You have to, but it's not fake it until you make it. It's just fake it for a week or two, and then go from there.
What I was getting at is there's another photographer, Salty Davenport. He did a guest lecture in one of my photography classes at uni. Yeah. And he was talking about how it's almost carbon copy what you did. His advice was, I just called around like these companies, Corona, and I think a couple of other ones, but he really wanted to work with some beer companies because he does Australian travel photography.
Mm.
And so what he would do is he would just go on LinkedIn, find who the marketing manager was for that company, call the company, you know, say the marketing manager's John Davis, and he would call the company and say, oh, is Jono there? It's Salty. Can I be patched through to him? And just pretend like you knew them.
Oh, yeah. I have a plenty and of those stories. Like, oh,
yeah. Yeah. And so I'm sure you've done that as well. You know, just to get through the receptionist and, you know, pretending that he knows them. And then once he'd get through, he'd be like, oh, well, you don't actually know me, but, you know, I'm really keen to work with you. Like, and that's, you know, I think that, like, you know, you don't necessarily have to do exactly that, but that kind of, I think, you know, there's a Steve Jobs speech where he talks about, it's been years since
it's a university speech. I've seen that one.
And he's talking about just ask.
Stay foolish.
I think it's a stay foolish one.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, you know, creating opportunities by just asking, like if they say no, what's going to happen?
Yeah. What the worst thing that can happen is that you get a no and get laughed at, and then you can try it again in a week or two when you improved or figured out a different way.
But what I was going to bring it back to is that, you know, I feel like so many people who graduate from these arts degrees and get very, you know, upset that, you know, no opportunities came their way is a lot of those people I see, I'm like, you're not asking, you're not going out and, you know, there's bugging people. Like,
yeah. Saying that, making a phone call. I have one funny story, which also I was engaged at a very young age and that broke up. And when that broke up, I just said, you know what? I'm not just going to leave you. I'm going to leave the whole fucking country. So I took everything I owned, which was 250 bucks at the time, and moved from Sweden back to Germany. And then I figured out, okay, I don't know anybody and I only have 250 bucks that will last me a couple of days. I need to make stuff happen. And I was in a city called Hanover at the time, and they were quite famous for their opera house. So I figured out the best way to get into event photography or maybe selling some nice fine art pictures of an empty opera. That's probably the place where I need to go. So I rocked up at the opera in the afternoon, and I was just knocking on the door, and there was a janitor, I don't know. And I was like, yeah, hello, I'm an exchange student from Sweden. And we are creating a little brochure where we give our students the choice between different country, different cities in Germany where they could go to and what there is to do. And I was wondering if it's possible for me to take some pictures of the opera house. And yeah, sure, I give you this contact number. And he's actually here, you can talk to him. Told him the same bullshit as I just told the janitor. They let me inside. I had the whole opera house for me, took a couple of pictures, and they still use those pictures for the opera house today.
That's awesome.
That, that sounds like fake it till you make it.
That sounds very much like fake it till you make it. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's it's crazy because that taking that initiative to just ask is so fulfilling.
Yeah.
The reason why we were talking about before how I transitioned from photography to videography.
Mm.
And the way that happened was I
that makes me jealous, by the way. I wish I could do that.
You can.
Mm.
And you know that. You know that too.
I don't have the patience for it.
You don't worry, like I'm out of patience with it a lot of times, but you know. You have a float and you're right after it. but my transition from photography to videography happened very quickly. I bought my camera. I did the exact same thing. I had a bad breakup and I moved to Canada and I lived in Banff for a little while. And that's where I bought my first camera, D5200.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
And, and came back home and was into photography here and there. And then when I bought my first full frame, the D750, I was like, right, that's it. I'm going to get into music photography now that I've got a camera that's gonna, you know, really handle low light and everything. And I'd recently become friends with Jack from the band Psychedelic Porn Crumpets.
Very silly. Shout out to the name, man.
Yeah,
cool name.
Yeah, great name, silly name, but they are insane musicians, like, and great mates of them these days still. But I just recently became friends with Jack, and I just sent a message, and I said they had a show at Badlands Bar, and I sent a message saying, hey man, your show's coming up at Badlands. Reckon you can hook me up with a photo pass. And he was like, yeah, no worries. And then he calls me, 5 minutes later, and he's like, oh, actually, we're going on this tour. We need a promo video done. Would you be interested in, you know, coming down a little bit early, just getting some video of us backstage being silly and all that, and then some footage of us on stage and, you know, making a little 30-second trailer. And I was like, yeah, that's sick. No worries. In my head, I'm like, oh, shit, I've not done video yet. I don't know too much
about
it.
That's how I feel every time I get a job, man.
I'll figure it out.
I have no idea what I'm doing.
And then an hour later, my phone rings and I pick it up and Jack goes, pardon my language, fuck it. Do you want to just come on the tour and film the whole tour?
Amazing.
And I was like, yeah, absolutely, man. No worries. We chatted and I hung up the phone and I was like, oh, sugar. I'm going to figure out how to film. And it, like, I have so much gratitude for those guys because they took a chance on me early.
Yeah.
And it's led me to,
but maybe they just thought, maybe they just thought you actually knew what you were doing, but just to drop in there real quick, that is exactly what keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
Stay humble. And that's why I love fighting so much, because I work a lot with fighters. And if you're the weakest guy in the room and you can get beat up and killed at any time, that keeps you humble. And I like that feeling of being nervous in front of a job. I don't really know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing, but is it going to work out? Am I going to get that shot?
Every time I go home and I'm like, oh, this is all right.
Yeah.
I'm in that shoot, I'm like, oh, shit.
The opposite for me. Every time I finish with a shoot, it's like, damn it, I messed it up. And then, you know, I need to let it settle for an hour or two, and then I will go it through. And yeah, it's nice. That's cool, man. That's cool. Music photography, concert photography. There's a lot of people out there who have a camera or a phone and they think they are photographers, which they pretty much could be, because taste is different from person to person. While people could think my professional photography looks like shit, and they prefer mobile phone photography. Taste is different, but I love music and I love to combine that with photography.
Yeah.
It's also very hard to make it unique.
What do you mean combine music with photography? Can you elaborate on that? You've lost me.
Music is what feeling sounds like.
Yeah.
One day you wake up, you want to listen to In Flames, and the next morning you wake up and you want to listen to Celine Dion, depending on your feeling. And I think that's exactly what photography is for me. And that's probably the reason why I don't own a massive studio nowadays because I had plenty of opportunities to make big money with photography, especially in fashion photography. But that's not what's fulfilling me. That's not what photography is to me. For me, it's really about the moment. And in sports, those moments happen quite often. Reportage, war, and moments don't really happen in fashion. They're kind of created, which is a different art, but it's not my kind of art.
Yeah.
And combining the feeling of music and really feeling music, and to express that feeling, what that music give, what that music gives you into a photo, is where the magic happens.
Yeah. Well, I like what you've done. I know you said earlier that you're restructuring or redoing your website, but when I looked at your website, it was kind of cool. It caught me off guard. Like, I'm going, all right. So the dude does black and white photos, and then I scroll the mouse over, and then color. It comes to color. I'm like, oh, nice little surprise. This is actually really nice.
Cool, thank
you. I'm invigorated.
That's what I love about magic. Life is about perspectives. You will never see a photo which I take from actually standing up in eyesight. I've never, ever taken a photo which is on the same level as my eyes when I'm standing up, because that's how I see life. That's everybody else, how everybody else sees life. But when was the last time you looked at a concert and you just said, okay, I'm going to lie down on the floor and see how the microphone and the artist looks from down here? Probably never.
Never.
So for me, it's about finding out, again, hashtag always a student. And I already know what life's looked like. I'm 192 centimeters tall. I know how life looks like from up here, but I don't know what it looks like from this angle or that angle. And discovering in new ways and coming back to magic, why I love magic or illusion, is because it is all about perspectives. I'm going to show you something later on with a card. It's not about the trick, because I just learned I suck at magic, to be honest. But it's about that something can look completely different from your angle, why it looks completely different from my angle. And that's also translated into life. I used to be very judgmental about people when they were angry. And I'm like, why are you messing up my energy? Like, I don't want to be angry just because you are angry. But you really quickly realize that you don't know what that person went through. They may break up with their fiance this morning, or they had a bad interview at work, or had a bad school test. And it takes a while. You know, when you're young, again, you think you know everything, but you don't know a shit.
Mm.
And I like that I don't know a shit.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
You learn way faster by that.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're talking about with anger and so forth. Because my philosophy is, or my theory is, whenever someone's angry at me, that's got nothing to do with me. It's got to do with their own shit.
Yeah.
And, well, that's my personal belief. Mm. So, like, when people, like losing their cool at me, and if I'm calm and composed in my demeanor, within a few moments, they kind of start feeling silly and they realize, oh, hang on, this has got nothing to do with you.
Mm.
Despite the fact that I might have triggered it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it has anything to do with me, and that's why I'm not saying I don't lose my temper. I'm a human being. I can snap at everybody. Mm. But then shortly after, I'm kind of like if I lose my crap at my kids, I'm kind of like, well, hang on, they're children, they're immature. If I reasoned with them and I was a lot more patient,
yeah,
I would have got a much better result out of them. Mm. And that's why whenever someone loses, I don't have road rage. That's one thing I pride myself on. So whenever someone's snapping at me, I can't help but sort of smile or laugh at them. I'm like, you've buried your head in the sand, haven't you, my friend?
Yeah, and you spend your energy on me. But let me ask you a question. I don't want to turn the interview around, but you said you had the same kind of story when you break up. And nowadays, I always laugh when people break up that were in the relationship and they're super angry at each other.
Mm.
There's a reason why you get angry. Why do you get angry at your kid when it touches the hot plate? Because you care about that person. And people forget that. They think that other people just get angry at them because they have nothing better to do. You have to realize that people only get angry at you if they care about you. You know, especially as a parent. Sometimes you get angry at your kid because it does something stupid and you don't want your kid to do the same mistake over again. Now, if it's the correct way for you to react angry or not, that's a different story. Depends on what your kid did. But again, perspective. Try to see it from a different perspective.
Well, my perspective on that, my answer to that is I have to return my kids to my ex-wife in full pieces. There is no refund on these things.
Here's a leg. Here's a head.
Yeah.
How old are your kids?
They don't come with insurance or warranties.
How old are your kids?
My daughter's about to turn 6 in June, and my son is 3.5.
Can I ask you a question?
Go for it.
Because I've been traveling, and not the worst case scenario for me is having kids, because I like to live freely. I like kids as long as I can give them back to someone at the end of the day. But how did that change life for you to actually have kids?
Well, apart from the financial side of things, I was talking to one of my advisors yesterday, and I rang him up for some financial advice, and he's going, look, I'm just about to go into an appointment. I said, okay, what appointment? He's like, I'm getting a snip. And I was like, really? He goes, man, I just keep shooting true. Like, I keep popping out kids, man. He's like, I can't keep up with this. This is financially a burden.
Yeah.
So I guess it definitely sort of cements you. And at the end of the day, you always have a choice. Like, I could still go and adventure out and get lost to the world or whatever, but I choose not to because I feel a stronger obligation towards raising my children so they have a father in their life. How it changes things, I would say it's made me a lot more compassionate towards children. I see children in a different light, and I'll give you what I'll call a superficial example. If I watched a movie like in my 20s or teens or whatever, and I saw a kid get massacred in the movie, I wouldn't care. Now, like, I watched, what season are you up to in Game of Thrones?
Season 5.
How far away into it are you in for?
Because I kind of burnt myself out.
Okay, all right.
About episode 4,
okay,
I think.
Okay, I can't use that example then because it's going to be a spoiler. So basically what I'll say is this. If I see a child get harmed in a film now, it actually puts me off so much that I cannot watch it. Like, I because all I see is my daughter or my son. And when they're around, they're a lot of work. And my favorite thing, what my personal favorite thing is doing is cooking food for them. I really love it, like cooking food for them.
I don't think I've ever dropped by your house and you're not cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's always something interesting.
Yeah, it's my vibe. It's like my heroin at the moment, that and coffee.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sober these days, so I kind of needed to like transfer.
Not that you were on heroin before, but.
Yeah. No, it's one of the few things I didn't try.
Yeah.
Vitamin H, I hear it's great. It changed because, I guess that's what I love doing is cooking for them. Yeah, when they're a lot of work and they can test you on every level. So you've got to be at your best all the time. As soon as you're not at your best, like I wasn't at my best on the weekend. I was just struggling emotionally. I was going through my own self-loathing. So it happens to the best of us, right?
Of course.
And because I was not at my best and I was not emotionally interacting with the child, I still took them swimming. I took them to the playground. I cooked food for them. We watched kids' movies, blah, blah, blah.
Kids can tell energy as well.
Yeah, oh, man, they tested me on every turn. They really challenged me. And I realized that and I felt so ashamed. And I rang my ex-wife and explained that to her, and she was very understanding. Like, she's like, look, I'm no saint. I mean, she's French, so she, you know, she's very passionate. She expresses herself. And when I'm at my best, they're absolutely amazing. And that's what I understand is you learn to grow. It's a hard question to answer. You've just got a lot more responsibility, but I'll nail it.
Let me ask you this way. Would you do it over again?
I would say that I wouldn't change it. I would not change anything. You know, the regrets you have in life. Sure, there's a million different things I could have done, but I would not have my children today.
Okay.
So I discovered true love when I had my daughter.
People always say that. Like, it gets completely
different. Really?
With parents, not all the people. I can say it, you can say it because we don't have kids, but you hear that a lot. Once your kid is born, it's a different level of love that you feel.
No, not for me.
Okay.
No. Everyone talks about this magic moment when their kid first comes out. When it first came out, because I and actually, I'm not going to say this because eventually my children will hear it or listen to it one day. but when my daughter was first born, my first child, I didn't feel anything. I just was like, I see
That's it. Also a common thing. Like it's, you know, and it's common in women as well. It's postnatal depression.
Yeah, yeah.
Brenton Sharp said that he didn't feel anything. It was
a
MMA
It's a natural thing to happen. Yeah. It's kind of almost like a, almost a shock kind of response.
Yeah, women have that as well sometimes. They have their kids and then they just don't feel like I can take care of this kid and then I feel this distance in between. I'm not a female. I don't know, but.
Yeah, and then a lot of it is must manifest into a guilt because they're not feeling anything. And then they're like, oh, I should be feeling something. And then kind of spirals.
I think that's what I'm a little bit afraid of.
No, that's fair enough. It just.
But
it just,
did you learn to develop that?
Yeah, over time, once and like Liddy, my wife at the time, she picked up on that and she was going through postnatal depression, probably because she had no one in her life and I was always busy working, so I wasn't around much. And when I was, like, you know, I didn't get any sleep because then it became my job to look after the little one. Mm. But the point was, after about a year when she started developing characteristics, I became a lot more engaged. Before, I was just doing my job.
Mm.
I just had a job to do.
Yeah.
And then just over time, it just naturally grew. And now I just love all the positive things, not the temper tantrums, but all the little things that she does differently.
That's another thing I've noticed a lot of people say is it's those moments. It was I can't remember where I heard it, but they were talking about in the context of, you know, settling down in life and where you find happiness when you
that's probably,
you know, the traditional settling down, so to speak, with kids and all that. And, you know, you can't go out, you know, go to the get a thrill at the casino, or you can't go out bungee jumping.
I bet $10,000 and my kid.
That should be worth some chips.
And one of the things that, you know, came up in this discussion was that it's, you know, it's these, you take the joys of those little moments and they all stack up and it makes it so worth it.
Yeah. Well, what I was having the chat with Darian, we'll call him our spiritual guru at our float center up in Joondalup.
Yeah, you guys have, that's something I learned. You guys have three float centers in Perth.
Yeah.
You have one in Wembley, one at the HBF Stadium, and then one in
Joondalup. Yeah.
Crazy. Insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and here we follow the sacred geometry of the architectural designs as well.
Yeah, for everybody who hasn't been in this float center, it's definitely worth going. Even if you have never tried floating, just to come in here, it just immediately punches you in the face and says, calm down, take a second.
Yeah, we try to focus more on a temple sort of environment as opposed to
retail. I like it a lot.
Yeah. But geez, now I've lost my point. As I was saying to Darren just last week was, would I change anything in my life? It's like there's so many things, sure, I wanted to do when I was younger, but I'm still excited about the future. You know, it's cliche to say it's the first day of the rest of my life, but that is true.
It is very true.
And there's a lot of things that happened in my life that could have been better, but that's helped me grow. Those experiences are now important to me because it helps me be a better man, helps me be a stronger man. And hypothetically, where you go, oh, if I could change things, like do everything again with the knowledge I had now, if you did anything differently, anything, that butterfly effect that I believe in would mean I wouldn't have those two little terrorists. So
that is why I'm having a problem with other people making choices sometimes, because you can make one small choice and it can affect the rest of your life. And sometimes you get forced into these choices. Like election is the best, political elections is the best example. They say we give you a choice and you can choose between A and B, but is it really a choice if you can only choose between A and B? And it is something that will affect the rest of your life. So as long, just be aware that of all the options.
I chose C.
You chose C?
Yep.
Yeah, you guys just had election. I don't want to get into politics, but.
No, I chose C. I chose C. I was very adamant about this. They gave me an option of A and B, so I went C. And that is, I chose
the Greens.
No.
I know what your answer is. Yeah, because you told me on the day.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually trying to get one of the Greens on our podcast or on my podcast because of you guys are struggling with cannabis legalization here in Australia, and I would love to talk somebody why you guys are so far behind the rest of the world. Even Thailand legalized. Dude, Thailand.
Really?
Yeah, it's legal to have weed in Thailand. And it's actually legal too if you have a prescription from Thailand, you can buy weed in Thailand and bring it into Australia, because in Australia there's a law that if you have medication that's not allowed in Australia but you need it, you can still bring it into the country. There was an article on the Australian Post or whatever it called not long ago. Yeah.
Apparently Norfolk Island grows a lot of cannabis.
Oh yeah, Thailand is one of the hot spots to grow cannabis. I mean, classic Thai stick is one of the most famous weed strains over the world. But yeah, again, I feel like in Australia, sorry to switch the subject here, but in Australia, the people are just too uneducated. They don't know that cannabis is more than just a fucking hippie getting high. It's it can cure your headache, back problems, epilepsy, and so many different things. And you can build cars out of hemp, clothes, so many things, food. It's so beneficial. And I feel like Australia is a little bit behind that. But hopefully you guys get your shit together very soon.
Hopefully it gets there. Yeah.
Well,
was that Senator Jordan Steele John? Huh? You'd be interviewing?
Well, I'm looking to find anybody who's who's willing to talk about it, because I also feel like that in Australia people are a little bit afraid of actually talking about it.
There is a little bit more of a stigma here than international.
Yeah, but if you don't talk, it's the same with death. Sorry to switch topics once again, but death is the same thing. People are so afraid of talk about death, but it's the only thing that you have to talking about choices. When people come to me and say, yeah, you have to be at that meeting at 12 on Tuesday. No. I don't have to do anything in my life except for dying. Everything else is a choice. Mm. But yeah.
You don't watch much TV here, do you?
No, I don't watch any TV anywhere.
That's good. Mm. It's good. I watch TV for different reasons, but there is so many life insurance ads on TV. So.
But that's what sells. Fear sells.
Yeah.
That's exactly why people, I don't want to get into hippie topics or sound wrong, but I'm only responsible for what I say, not for how you understand it. Fear is what keeps people in check. That's why people want to, you want a house, you want a car, you want to send your kids to school, which means you have to pay your bills. So if you don't pay, you are in trouble. We create fear. But at the end of the day, money is just paper. I understand that you need money, and money is a thing that is super important. I didn't used to think like that back in the day, but without money, we would not have the world we have today, because money was the first thing that everybody around the world saw and communicated as the same thing. I knew $1 means $1 over here. And to get American to understand that and a Japanese person to understand that, the money was the first thing that actually created this common ground. So it's super important. But yeah, fear is something, again, you learn so much when you travel. You learn what's important and what's not important. I had a woman on my podcast before I took my podcast on a break for a year. Her name is Sarah Knight. There's a TED Talk out as well. She is a New York Times bestselling author, and she wrote a book, The Magic of Not Giving a Fuck. And you have a fuck budget, which you can start every day, and you only have so many fucks to give every day. So am I choosing to spend some of my fuck budget of somebody who cuts me off at the traffic light? Is it really worth it? Nah, I save my fucks for something that's more important.
Yeah.
So learn to manage your fuck budget.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm a little bit the opposite. Something hectic or something big happens, I'm calm as Hindu cow. And then if it's a small thing like milk sort of spills, I go into a sympathetic state.
You've only ever got like fuck change in your pocket. You don't have your wallet with you.
Also, you own a float center. You should be the person that's calm.
Yeah, true. I hear that a lot. My intensity is different. I operate on a different scale, but I'm working on it. Before we finish up, I will leave you on one note, and this is also for the audience in terms of your interest with cannabis and so forth, is you should Google a guy called the Weeded Warrior. He's a guy in Brisbane. He suffered, I don't know if it's ongoing, from post-traumatic stress, PTSD, from the Afghan wars. So I met this guy in Portland, and it took me a week in Portland, Oregon to realize that weed was actually legal there. I kept on smelling it wherever I went. And it wasn't until I was at a bar with a Canadian chick and she's just sparked up a joint in front of me. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? She's like, it's legal here. And I was like, oh. give it here.
I used to have that in Amsterdam when I went to the Netherlands. I always was afraid to smoke outside. But
yeah. Well, this guy, this weeded warrior guy, I can't remember his name, but he is the weeded warrior. He's in Brisbane. So he was a big advocate. What he found really helped him, he's got his own float tank in his house. So he floated and cannabis. And he is trying to really fight, like go down to Canberra a lot and basically dispute this and try and raise awareness that, hey, it doesn't have this negative stigma that you think it does. And he's trying to help make people more aware. It's like, don't use it for recreation. Well, maybe, but a recreation or whatever. But
it's a powerful tool.
Powerful tool. Like if you used it the way I used it back in the day, you know, I was there to lobotomize myself and slow myself down. Mm. It didn't really work in that level. But in the last 4 years, I took it once and it actually – I came out with a lot of interesting concepts. I became quite creative.
You end up challenging your ego. I feel like that's like the in so many different ways.
I feel like it's important to make people understand that you have to accept, when you are in a different country, you have to accept the culture and the rules, but that does not have to keep me from trying to educate you and tell you or show you what I learned in different places of the world where rules are a little bit different. So, I hope you guys can get there one day.
Victoria just legalized medicinal. Mm. It's very high level, like threshold.
Mm.
But, Victoria's taken a step. ACT as well.
Yeah, of course.
And Australia is one of the biggest cannabis exporter in the world. It's crazy, especially in Perth.
I didn't know that.
Perth has so many cannabis companies here. One of the biggest hydroponic grow companies are sitting here in Perth.
That's ridiculous.
But as I understand it from the research I did, it's very hard for people to take part of that business. It's more like a business for people who have money. And roots need to be adjusted a little bit. That's my opinion.
Mm. Big financial ticket entry.
Money rules the world no matter if we want it or not.
Capitalism.
Yeah. Damn it.
All right, cool. We're going to have to finish up there. So I guess it's safe to say if the audience, of course the audience are listening, that Steve-O is not in that 75%, which is the regret of the dying. Like the study was 75% of all people that, according to this nurse's survey, that passed away on their deathbed, they said one of the biggest, their number one regret was not doing the things that they wanted to achieve. So you clearly don't tick that box. So thank you so much for being on board with us today, Steve-O. It's been great listening to your stories.
Thank you so much for having me. And I want to give a shout out to your float centers because you guys do an amazing job. And when I came to Perth and I got introduced to Beyond Rest, just amazing. Your chill out area here, I can chill, have a cup of tea before I come and float, enjoy the float. The tanks are amazing. You have several locations, so it doesn't matter really where I am in Perth. Mm. I love floating here, and I would love to get you guys on my podcast if I might push in a little plug here.
Yeah.
Surrounded by
Details. What's the name of your podcast?
Surrounded by Details podcast. I was on a break for a year. I'm about to record my first relaunch episode tonight, but we also have a podcast called Digital Hitman After Hours, where it's a little bit more relaxed, where we talk about the business part and how people actually are behind the business, because you're not just a business person. You run your business as you run your life. So it would be very interesting to get you on that. And I get you on my podcast to talk a little bit about photography.
Yeah, I'd love
and,
that.
And you can teach me a little bit more about videography. Thanks so much for having me, man. It was a pleasure.
And just quickly, where can people find that? Because you were telling me before, it's
because of the break I had, because of my travels and moving around, it was on a hold. So you can look for Surrounded by Details podcast on YouTube. And in a couple of days, you will also, again, find us on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher. Look for Digital Hitman After Hours on YouTube. And again, also that in a couple of days on iTunes, Podbean. You can find me on Instagram, Steve Bonhage, StevBonhage, where I have all sorts of my work. And if you want to get into my fight photography, there's SB Fight Photography. You know how to spell that. If not, look the dictionary up. And www.stevbonhage.com. And write me a mail. I love having conversations with people. Or as I said, I love to be stupid in this life. It teaches you a lot.
That was the most condensed and well-formed plug
we've ever had on here.
Come on, let's be honest.
It's not your first rodeo, is it?
I'm 169 episodes deep into my podcast. Right, yes.
I reckon like people that have to keep rewinding it to write it all down.
Awesome, all right, man.
Thanks for your time, Steve-O.
Thanks, man.
And as always, thank you, Matt.
Thanks, man.
All right, so I'm sure you enjoyed that podcast today. Stay tuned for our next episode. This is Perth Reconnect Podcast in the Beyond Rest Chill Out space. I'm your host, Ben Dunham.